one that let me not be a burden to my children. May my caretakers be skilled and compassionate. If I spend time in a nursing home, help me mourn my losses as I must then enjoy what there is to enjoy. Making new friends in that setting, being a friend to others there, let me deepen my spirituality, thanking you for my strong years, being thankful for help in weakness. Let me laugh as long as possible and celebrate my life and you. That was her prayer that they discovered at her passing. So if you want a copy, just over on the table. As I said, I'm very excited that Irene was willing to come and share her journey. I think Irene, like my brother said, we come from a long range of criers. But when I think of Irene, I think of her as... she makes me cry. Hospitality. I also think of her as an encourager. And just out of curiosity, just a few minutes before I came down here, I have in my filing cabinet, two folders that I've labeled encouragement. And when notes have come in to encourage, I've put them in there. And when there are those days when you need that, I open them up and read through some. I've kept a number of the ones, all of the ones that Irene has written to our children. And they have kept those. And I went through very quickly those two files. And I found about 20 or 30 cards and letters and notes from Irene that she has written to me, to Debbie and I, to our family. Encouragement. A number of you have done the same, and your notes are in my file. But I really am very appreciative. Irene for the encourager that she is. And when we were experiencing our journey with the Big C, and we had just been given the news, and we were driving down the street, both of us, my wife and I, in tears. And I looked up ahead and I thought, oh, gee, that looks like Irene Satrova. And Debbie said, well, no, it couldn't be. But she and her family went to Hyatt or Wakaw. And we drove up, and who was it? It was Irene Satrova. And there the three of us were, sharing a journey together in tears. The next morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, Irene Satrova arrives at our door with donuts for the kids and encouraging words for us. So I have been longing for a long time to have Irene share her journey with us. And I call on Irene now.
Thank you for coming. It's always nice to be among friends, although right at this minute I wonder if it would be less intimidating to be before a group of strangers than people that know me well. But no, I'd much rather be here among friends. When John asked me to speak about my life's journey...
Irene, can you speak up a little?
The mic isn't on.
Oh, the mic isn't on.
It's not on.
Is it on? Get a little closer. Is that any better?
Get another mic stand. That'll make it closer to you.
I'll try and speak loudly. Is that any better if I get a little closer to it? Maybe a little right there. When John asked me to speak about my life's journey and I started to explore the memories of a lifetime, I was surprised to discover how long I've lived. And I never figure out how old I am. We never talk about age because I know the year I was born. And although one of my top subjects in school was algebra, I've never learned how to subtract. And so I really never figured that one out. So I guess I'll just be honest as long as I can. But it's turned out to be a very interesting experience, sort of reliving and revisiting experiences that have been stored in my memory bank, and there are many. So I'm going to share just a few areas of my life that have enriched my life and brought special meaning to it. And I brought some show and tell along, too. Some show and tell, is that better? Which hopefully will add a little bit of interest to what I have to say. Mostly I will speak about heritage and family, but I also want to include a few topics like hospitality, arts and crafts, music, and church, of course. My heritage has played a key role in shaping my life and faith. My paternal grandparents, Edo Kim and Yelena Bellows, were born in the province of Kiev in the 1870s. And they owned a very small farm, but by trade, my grandfather was a weaver and apparently a very good one. And my grandmother used to spin the yarns and the wools and the threads that he used. And an art which she never forgot. In fact, I can remember as a child watching her spin at a spinning wheel after the sheep had been sheared and the wool had been washed and carded, and then she would spin it into wool and knit mitts and scarves and, like many of you do, hats for her growing children. So together, my grandparents ran this small textile trade. But it was obvious that they were never going to earn a profitable living doing that, so they were unsure what to do. But some of their relatives earlier had moved to Canada and were writing persuasive letters saying, come to Canada, it's a land of opportunity. There's a lot more that you might be able to do here. So they were able to sell their small farm, and they got exactly the amount of money they needed for passage to Canada.
Wow.
So they arrived in Canada in 1910, in June, I believe it was, with four children, and they truly pioneered. They started to cut down trees and make logs to build their first home, which was very primitive. It was built of logs and mud chinks and had a dirt floor. No modern conveniences like electricity or water. And I can hardly believe it when I look at my home now with all its modern conveniences that just one generation ago my father lived in such primitive conditions. And thus began many chapters of hardship and adventure as they pioneered in this province. My grandmother birthed 14 children, 12 of whom lived. And this family tree that I brought here records all the begets of the 12 siblings, which makes for a wonderful, huge family reunion when we get together every 5 years to celebrate our heritage. And you know how most people sort of dread family reunions. Well, everybody can't wait for the next reunion. And for a number of years, the 12 siblings were able to attend. Now, most of them are gone, but there are still three left. So we continue to get together. When they immigrated to Canada, they brought four children with them, the eldest being my father, and very little else. But they did bring a very important possession that no amount of hardship could take from them. They brought a live and active faith in God and a personal belief in Jesus Christ. And it was this vital faith which they passed on to their children, which was then passed on to me by my parents, and which has been the anchor of my life. We were taken to church every Sunday. We always had to sit quietly, even if it was a long sermon in Ukrainian. The Bible was read in our home,
And so it was natural that as a teenager, I made a decision to become a Christian and was baptized in a lake. I think it was called Lake Helen. it was at that when I was a teenager. I remember a few weeks ago Mark Anderson sharing in church about how privileged he felt to be brought up in a Christian home. But that later in life he had to review that experience to understand what it meant to him personally. I relate to that and went through a similar process. So I grew up on a farm in northern Saskatchewan among the wheat fields. And some of the chores we did were picking rocks from the field and gathering eggs and eating turkeys and milking cows. Yes, I did know how to milk cows. So I'm a bit of a pioneer myself. And I remember the days of harvest when we used to take great tubs of sandwiches out to the workers in the field. And I just so looked forward to that part of my pioneering experience. Although our home was a secure and loving one, and God was an important factor in our lives, we weren't immune from pain and heartache and loss. I was the youngest in our family of three siblings, my older sister Joyce, who is here today, and an older brother, Billy, who was always the life of any party. When I was 12 years old, two very significant events happened in our family that had a profound influence on us. Deep breaths. In April, a wonderful surprise gift was delivered to our family, and we named him Kenneth. Can you imagine how excited a 12-year-old girl would be to have a baby in the house? So I had the privilege and joy of being the built-in babysitter to my brother until I left home and he was still a toddler. Little did we know at the time what a truly generous and significant gift he was. He was born in April. And in September of that year, my 19-year-old brother Billy was killed in a harvest accident. I thought I could get through this. I remember well the grief and sadness that our family experienced. But I also remember the support and the love that we received from family and friends and the underlying strength that our faith provided for us. I remember my father saying, "God gives and God takes away. God took my big brother from us, but he gave us my little brother, Ken, who's been a wonderful friend. And now the roles have been kind of changed, whereas I cared for him when he was little. Now I often go to him for counsel and advice and support. So he's been a great friend. And I'm doubly blessed to have my sister, Joyce, who's another dear friend and a great support. And I should include my husband." Who's really my best friend. Sometimes we don't recognize God's hand in our lives until we look back. When I came to Regina as a young music student, I was looking for a job to pay my way. So I pounded the pavement day after day, submitting job applications, and day after day, getting rejections. Needless to say, I was quite discouraged and ready to give up. And in retrospect, I could see why God closed so many doors, because he kept the reserved the best door in his loving plan to be open in his timing. It was a secretarial position in the Human Resources of Department of Health, which appealed to me because I loved interacting with people. And it had a few interesting sidelights. One, it was just a block or two from the conservatory, so I could use my lunch hours and practice after work hours to practice at the conservatory, use their practice facilities. Another perk of the job is that I met and became friends with a colleague. Her name was Lorna, and we ended up living together in one of those light housekeeping suites on the third floor of 23 block Ritalik Avenue. It was quite luxurious. We did have a little hot plate, and there was a laundry facility that everybody in the building used. Well, one beautiful summer evening, my friend Lorna really wanted to go to the country. And alas, her boyfriend didn't have a car, but he had a friend who had a car. So Lorna bribed, threatened, browbeat me, going into a blind date with her friends, with her friend's friend, so that she could go to the country. So she and I watched from our third floor window as these two men came up the walk, because I wanted to have a look before I decided to really go through with this. And when I saw him, we decided it wasn't too bad a risk. So off she went, off we went, she with her friend and me with my blind date in his car. And a year later, I married the blind date with my eyes wide open.
Let me say that she was blind and I was her date.
Anyway, here we are, 56 years later, still living happily ever after. Well, a few years later, our lives changed monumentally with the arrival of son number one, followed 3 years later by the arrival of son number two, followed 3 years later by the arrival of son number three. Well, I had been told that the happiest families are those in which the children are properly spaced. And I found that to be very true. The best spacing is about 20 yards apart. When the boys were little, my go-to verse was from Philippians 4. This is a paraphrase. Don't be anxious for anything. Instead, pray about everything with thanksgiving. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ our Lord. In fact, it is still my go-to verse now that my boys are adults with families of their own. I discovered that once they leave home, they are still your kids. And you never stop being involved in their lives. If they are going through a difficult time, so are we. Dick and I are so grateful that our three sons and their wives are men and women of faith. Don't be anxious about anything. What an exercise in faith. Do I ever experience anxiety? Am I human? When I was going through my first encounter with cancer and facing chemotherapy after my surgery, I experienced an irrational fear of chemotherapy. Some of you here walked through that struggle with me and gave me much needed support. Thank you. Someone had sent me a Get Well card with Psalm 34 highlighted in it, and that psalm became my fortress. It says, I sought the Lord and he delivered me. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and he delivers them. I clung to those verses and asked God to take away my fear. The morning I went for my first chemo treatment, I felt no fear, but instead experienced that profound peace that passes all understanding. The Lord delivered me from all my fear. What a wonderful affirmation of God's presence in a time of need. And that affirmation gave me strength and courage when I was faced with my second encounter with cancer 2 years ago. So that's a little sketch of my family portrait, and I wanted to touch on a few other things that have influenced and enriched and shaped my life, and that's where the show and tell comes in. Hospitality. When we were growing up, the door to our home was always open. And it was literally always open because they didn't have a lock and key on the door. But my parents were very hospitable and kept itinerant preachers and visiting missionaries, of whom there just seemed to be a lot, and cousins by the dozens. But all were welcomed and fed and bedded and served with joy. And I'm so grateful that that gift was passed on to me and that Vic has always supported it. And one of our greatest joys through the years has been to open our homes to friends and strangers. And for several decades, Sunday lunches were enjoyed by family and extended family and strangers who became friends. What a rich experience that was for us. And we still get pleasure in doing that. And one of the things I brought is a guest book. It was always fun to have guests write in our book. And I have several of these that we've collected over the years. Another important, you know, I've missed something here. Okay, maybe not. Okay, arts and crafts. Vic and I have always derived a great deal of satisfaction and fulfillment from doing creative activities. Vic is the painter, designer, artist, and I do artsy, craftsy things. For a number of years when I was involved in a craft business, Vic and I would spend summer days driving through the countryside, hunting for weeds and grasses and grains and flowers. And Vic had to have good reflexes because we'd be driving around along a road and I'd say, stop! And after he recovered the fright, we'd pull over and out we go with our clippers and boxes and fill them with all sorts of wonderful dried things, which then turned into floral arrangements. I've also loved working with textiles and experienced great joy and fulfillment in creating bags and quilts and other things, fabric, and I brought a few samples of those here. I still love being involved in something creative. It's kind of a therapy for me when I'm going through a stressful time and also kind of an energizer. Church. This church has played an important role in shaping the person I am. And as Vic and I were looking back over our 50-some years of involvement here, has anybody here been here more than 50 years? You might not be aware of some of the things that have happened in the past, but we were very involved in a large and active college and career group where we formed lifelong friendships with many of those people, although most of them now have moved out of province to greener pastures in Alberta and BC and Ontario and wherever. But for many years we used to get together in the mountains for a retreat just to get caught up on each other's activities and renew our friendships. We also gave leadership to a group called Couples Club. And it was a group that meant that met on a monthly basis, and it was strictly a social time. And we used to have a New Year's Eve party in this lower hall, and it was filled to capacity. Somehow, I have trouble thinking that we could have a group now called Couples Club. And then, as it is now, Tuesday night has always been sort of a family together night here. And a number of years ago, we had an outreach to children and youth of the core area, and where we provided a meal and some recreation for them. And we all came with large casseroles to feed large appetites, and many of you were involved in that. And then there was the hippie era, and our church was used as a meeting place for the Jesus people. And Vic was quite involved with that group. And a lot of very unusual events took place here at that time. When our kids were little, we did several things at Katepa Camp, where we cooked, did crafts, caught mice, and did handyman stuff. In recent years, our activities have been more on visual arts, decorating for Christmas, creating banners, I brought a sample here, and pulpit hangings. And then music. Of course, music and the choir have played a major role in my involvement here. I've learned so much from John about the significance of music ministry and how it enriches our worship experience. My years in the choir have probably been my longest and one of my most meaningful involvements here. So thank you, John, for the major role you've played in enriching my music experience and for your dedication in using quality music as a tool for outreach and for enriching our worship experience in this congregation. One of the things I miss about not being in the choir is having this bird's eye view of the congregation. And so keeping track of who's there and who's missing and who's new. But it's also very nice to sit with my husband for the first time in many years. Somebody has to keep him in. So music has always been a very integral part of my life. And as with arts and crafts, music has also been a source of therapy and enrichment, a kind of a de-stressor, and a place to express myself and to use the tool of worship and praise and meditation. So these are a few areas of my life that have been and are important to me. And the thoughts I want to close with reinforce what John said in his devotional. I think of myself as an ordinary person. I don't have a master's degree or a PhD, and I haven't broken any marathon records or written a book, but I have learned that there is no such thing as an ordinary person. We are all created in the image of God. He has gifted each of us in unique ways. He loves us, and we are special to Him. I love this version of Romans 12:1 from The Message. Take your everyday ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. If we walk around our ordinary days being conscious of God's presence and offering ourselves to Him, those days become extraordinary. Each of you here in my church family has contributed something to make my life richer. My life experience so far has been extraordinary, and my prayer for you is that yours will be too. Thank you for staying to listen, and God bless.